to Tango Mobile.
BC.
Leo to T-Mobile.
Turned out to be a real nice day today, didn't it?
Yeah, and not real warm, but I mean, still a good day, and it was dry, so I had two home inspections to do this morning, so it wasn't too bad. Of course, I was talking to Tom this morning. The first place I went in, the houses had to be in the $1.5 to $2.5 million range. They were an exclusive country club up above Boiling Springs, South Carolina.
Did you put an offer in while you were up there?
Sale anywhere, so I kept my nickels and dimes in my pocket.
Okay, these prices have really gone up dramatically in the last year and a half or so. I thought it might pare back a little bit with the interest rates as high as they are, but so many people are paying cash now. I don't think they take that into consideration.
About it, and also, but yeah, prices and just coming down the road from there, coming back out on the road that I went in on to get to the subdivision to where I went, there was a place along that road where they've got the land prepped for another housing development and some more of these what I call zero property line houses where you and the neighbor can reach out to your windows on the same side of the, if you're, you know, on the one side of the house, and he on the left, you on the right, you can shake hands, you know, across the space between. At least that's what it feels like once they put all the air conditioning and stuff in between the two buildings.
Hey, New York.
They're going to put about 100 to 150 houses in this one subdivision where they're clearing the land, preparing it.
Zero lot line, so you can literally look through your neighbor's window and watch television. Yeah, you know, if I wanted that, I'd stay in New York.
Jerry, I got a phone call, W2T.
Yeah, my daughter's house like that. They've got about 15 feet between the houses, but mine's not like that. I've got maybe a little bit over a half acre wide anyway. We got an Airbnb. He's trying to make it into an Airbnb down below us down here, but they didn't get the approval from the county. They're doing it anyway, so they've been cited a couple of times. Now I'm curious to see what the sheriff's office is going to do about it.
Gee, I think the Airbnb thing has played itself out. There's supposed to be an oversupply of them right now, huh?
Built the house for him. He had one of his own over here about maybe a mile from here, and he was making... It was about a $800,000 or $900,000 house. He was renting out the whole bottom of it, and he was making, I don't know, maybe $6,000-$7,000 a month off his, just renting it out. But this also a really nice. This is an older neighborhood. They bought it without even having it. It wasn't Airbnb before, so they tried to get the exception for it, but the county turned them down. They've got to advertise doing it now, so they've been cited, so we'll see what happens. There was a couple that actually, he's a doctor, and I think she's a pharmacist, and they don't live in the area. They live in either Greenville or Spartanburg. They just bought it as income property, I guess. And, of course, when they got in front of the commission, they lied. They said they were going to live in the house, and I said, they ain't going to live in the house. They were never, the only reason they set foot in it is to check it after... I guess they've only had two sets of people visit over Thanksgiving weekend, and visited, I think it's about $300 a night. They rent it for like 3 or 4 days at a time.
Maybe it's worth it, because I think the rule on Airbnb is nobody can stay there for, let's say 30 days at a time. Otherwise they become a resident, and you got a whole other set of rules. But if you're charging, you know, more than $100 a night, more than $200 a night, you know, who really cares?
It's just a one way in, one way out. It's at the end of the road down here, but they didn't get approval for it. But they're gonna wind up in court, I guess, before it's over with. But they pay way too much money for the house, most of the houses in the neighborhood here are probably in the $250,000 to $300,000 range. Maybe some of them are, you know, around four. They got lake property and they paid over $600 for this one. I think it's around $660 or $670. It is dockable, but then you'll have to get a rope to get down to the lake. It's so steep.
What mine's doing right now is getting an RV or a motorhome and just driving the hell out of this godforsaken part of the country. But you know what? It's now no longer that cheap to live like in an RV park either. They want $60, $70 a night just to park in an RV park, you know, to use their water and electricity and take up a parking space. So at that price, you know, not even that's a good way to live cheaply anymore. I was figuring maybe RV park fees would be, what, $20 a night? How could it be very much more than that? You know, you have your own house. You know, you just need water and power and a parking spot. But no, those prices are up there now. So even that isn't worth it to me anymore.
Across the street, he's got a membership. Yeah, they buy into it. He's got one up in near Hiawatha, Georgia. He bought into three of them. I think it was like $1,400 or $1,500 a year. And he's got enough time where he can stay up there year round. He can just move his fifth wheel around if he needs to. They'll move it for him, as a matter of fact. And it even includes the course. You know, I think I don't know whether the power may be included now, but it's a pretty nice place. But there again, you don't get to move around much. You have to basically stay there. He got 2 weeks out of the month for that, and then he either had an extra one or maybe two extra ones that he got while he was buying into it. And he got a good deal on his. I think it was the whole deal was less than $3,000 a year. And I don't know if he had to pay. I don't remember what if he had to pay for electrical cover night. It wasn't much though at all, because a lot of those, you know, have their own generators anyway, and they usually stays there during the summertime. And during the winter, you'd have to have propane, I guess. But they don't use a lot of electricity anyway, I don't guess.
That's a lot of money. Maybe that's the sort of thing I should look for, to see if you could buy more or less a permanent RV space. Because I've had it with the South. I don't want to be here. But, you know, I got no good way to move at this point. You know, where am I going to go? I can't start my life over again for like the fourth time. I don't have any money left. So I figured that sort of mobile lifestyle suits me pretty well right about now. With no kids, no grandkids, no relatives, no nothing. You know, I can just go anywhere.
It's a lot cheaper than here. It's probably Kentucky, parts of West Virginia, and Oklahoma, and parts of Kansas, I guess. The rest of it is all pretty expensive still. Some parts of Mississippi are not too bad, but, you know, if you don't want to stay in the South, you're going to have to go somewhere else. And of course, out west, it's just it's terribly expensive out in New Mexico, Arizona. You just buy up there, and the other thing is you don't have any. They gouge them out there because all the guys, all the people from California coming through and visiting. But it is very reasonable. I was surprised it was that cheap. And he's in his mid-70s. I think he just got one now, and he uses it during the summer, I guess. When it gets hot here. But I've seen pictures of the area. It's pretty nice. But you're not going to find anything very cheap. I mean, they got you. They know they got you, and they'll charge whatever the market will bear.
It's not the part of the country, per se. Maybe it's just that too much has happened to me down here. I mean, I had a piece of real estate stolen from me. I had another piece of real estate vandalized to the point where it's basically worthless. So, you know, I'll probably meet the same sort of people anywhere I go. I guess I'm just not lucky in that respect.
It's difficult to keep up with it sometimes. depending on where you buy it, just, you know, the best thing to buy is to buy, you know, land and not to worry about having anything built on it. And they will generally won't do anything to this. Your land is still pretty cheap in the area. You can, if you don't mind, get away from out of the city or out, you know, out in the county or get away, maybe towards Abbeville that way. I know one of my friends, I think he bought 75 acres, and he's got a couple other spots down there, and he's trying to get my son to buy a few acres and build out there, but he's not interested in doing that because it's just too far away from everything, too far away from work for him with the fuel prices that are there now. And so that's where that is. But one of the guys, matter of fact, he's on this repeater sometimes. The guy he'd been renting from for years just basically kicked him out. And he's living out in the middle of a field somewhere with and like a camper van.
I'm pretty much in Clinton right now, in the middle of the field. Water, septic tank, plumbing, it's all been destroyed. Vandals, scrappers. You know, I hate to say this, but if I ever found out who did it, I'm not sure I would involve law enforcement. We'll handle this the New Jersey way. You know, why do people do things? You try to deny yourself things to save money, only to have somebody either take it or destroy it.
I was offered a job in that area. It's been quite a few years ago. Went in and looked at the plant, and the job looked okay. And they were going to provide a house for me, if it was an older house. And I started asking questions, and it was in the Clinton area. And they just, you know, everybody I talked to said, you know, don't go down there. That's a pretty rough area down there. At least it has been in years past. It's not someplace I'd want to live anyway. I'll put it that way.
I got a methamphetamine problem, although I suppose you have that in a lot of other places. But yeah, you know, I'm beginning to think you're right. It's you know, not one of the more oh, what the hell's wrong with me? Not one of the better areas you can find around here.
Way everywhere. It's just certain sections of counties are worse than others. You know, Hart County's got a lot of nice areas in Hart County. There's some areas that have been known to be bad areas for 60 or 70 years. And they're still bad areas. They're just generally areas that aren't built up or they had a manufacturing there at one time and it moved away and all the houses are derelicts and that sort of thing. I think that applies to a lot of places everywhere in the country, but maybe more so in the South, just because there's a lot of poverty here to begin with.
It's a combination of a lot of things. You know, poor paying jobs, which I think ties into poor education, poverty, drug abuse, broken families, single parent families. You know, I guess everyone down here, they do their family planning with unplanned parenthood. but, and, you know, looking at this as a northerner, or at least an outsider, I think it's almost a sociological problem. It's a certain southern mindset. It's a tradition of, you know, a tradition of heritage, and it's based on a hierarchical, hereditary type of society, and it hasn't really, it's a sort of mindset that, you know, let's say the North didn't have, as far as developing industry and trade and commerce and that sort of thing. I could go into it at length sometime, but I probably won't. Not now.
That may be true up to a point. Some of it is just circumstances and, you know, lack of ambition and that sort of thing. It's just certain areas. Certain areas are worse than others. You know, other areas are totally different. And I think a lot of it just comes from just not having, you know, people not believing education was the right thing to do. It wasn't worth it to them. Then that's all they'll ever be. You know, they drop out of school and that's it. And There's no ladder for them then at all to climb. They don't have a, they can get to one or two rungs, that's about it. They don't have a base or anything to, and they don't, you know, they don't come from a family that believes in that. And it's kind of a vicious cycle. And I see it other places too. I've seen it in the Midwest where, you know, people worked in certain industries. That's all they ever did. Seen it in the West too, and especially in Idaho and Montana and places like that are so expensive for people to live now. They either ranch or they just didn't have anything. They're still in the Southwest. It's everywhere. It's just certain parts of certain areas are the same. And it's like you can all tie it to lack of education and, you know, no home life.
Here's what I see. Now, perhaps I'm wrong. The South was always a traditional society, but what I mean by that is the South was an aristocracy. It was based on a rigid hierarchical social structure where you're basically born into the class you're born in, and, you know, each tier of society has its own, in other words, there's no upward mobility. You know, especially not for those people. So you have a rigidly defined social hierarchy, and you're taught early on in life, this is your station in society. And what I think that does is, to some degree, it works against the more progressive mindset that emphasizes education and study and learning and achievement, because what good is any of those things if I'm never going to be more than what I am now? Now, you see, the North, on the other hand, at least until fairly recently, was a meritocracy. We don't care who you are or who your daddy was or your granddaddy was. You know, what can you do for me now? So there was that emphasis on learning, education, trades, crafts, study, that sort of thing, that somehow you didn't have in other parts of the country. Also, the North having a lot of immigration. You know, people had to work together. And also, immigration brings in new ideas, new blood, new ways of looking at things, new ways of doing things. So that's primarily the way the North and the South evolved. And that's why I say there's a certain mindset which seems in some ways different, which in a way is holding it back.
Most of our immigration happened prior to about 1700, and the people, you know, those of us that have been living here all our lives, you know, can generally trace our ancestors back then, that far here, just being here. Mine were here before 1700, my wife's life was here before 1700, too. It's just none of us were aristocracy, but we'll end up doing okay anyway, in spite of it, I guess. But there's a certain amount of truth in that, and also the South is always an agrarian society, which the North wasn't. There wasn't enough land up there for it to be. It had to do something else. But you couldn't grow enough food, so the South handled food and some of the other crops, you know, cotton and other materials that were needed for manufacturing. And so I got the bright idea of moving a lot of it, you know, some for the good, some for not. But, you know, whatever's happened over the last 150 years doesn't really matter now, because, you know, we can't, you know, we keep gaining ground on population from outside, and, you know, it's helped some. It's some areas it hadn't helped. Some areas it's helped. Some areas it hadn't helped. You know, you just have to, like I said, we are a traditional society, and, you know, most of us are. I mean, still the big majority of us have deep roots here. Can trace back generations upon generations. And that doesn't change overnight. I mean, it takes time. It may take another 100 years before it sets itself the way, you know, to equalize that, but who knows what's going to happen. I'm enjoying what I got right now, to be honest with you, in 4DJC.
And you've sort of just hit on the other two things. See, south, the north and the south basically had key differences on three things. The first of all, the first one being tariffs. The north wanted high tariffs to protect their industries from foreign competition. The south didn't, because a lot of their economy relied on importing manufactured goods from elsewhere. You know, as for immigration, that's why the North wanted more liberal immigration laws. They needed immigrants. We need even cheaper workers than the workers we have now. You know, the native people want 10 cents an hour. I want to hire people who work for 2 cents an hour. Let's get a bunch of Irish in here. So, you know, immigration, tariffs, and what was the third thing? Internal improvements. The North, rapidly industrializing, needed things like, you know, roads, bridges, tunnels, railroads, telegraph lines, that sort of thing, because that's what an industrialized society needs. It needs advanced communication. It needs advanced transport. You know, the South, to get the cotton from the field to, you know, some shipping lane somewhere, you know, we'll, you know, that doesn't matter to us. And, you know, those were the three basically irreconcilable differences that led to, you know, what it led to.
JC Friday. Yeah, well, you know, you can parallel a similar thing in Midwest and West with all the crops and stuff that's grown out there, and even parts of the upper Midwest where they grew a lot of, you know, cattle and hogs and that sort of thing, and packing plants in Chicago and that sort of thing. You got to have property to be able to do that, and there's certainly not any property in the Northeast and not enough to support, you know, that many people. So that's kind of a similar thing, too. People don't understand sometimes why people in different parts of the country are so different from each other, because it's just a different society. One's based on, somebody's based on agriculture, the other's based on industry, and some of them have a good mixture of both. But, you know, take California for instance. California is a huge state, but you cut off the Colorado River, and California will dry up, and they know it. And so does Nevada, and so does, you know, so do other states. You know, they can't survive without water. So, you know, they got a tipping point there where they can't survive without other things. And they have to import water, just like some of these places have to import. But like Europe, you know, now, I saw last night, I think either France or one of the countries had to start back up coal-fired plants because they couldn't, solar just wouldn't work for them because they couldn't get the gas from Russia, I guess, or wherever it's coming from. You know, whenever you do a lot of importing, you always have problems. You know, there's always potential for problems anyway, but California's a prime example of, I think the San Joaquin Valley probably would dry up if you cut off some of their water supply from the outside. They can't supply it themselves, I know that.
So, California, for some reason, is always painted as an example of a disaster, an economic disaster. You know, it's been anything but that. You know, the largest, most diverse economy in the Union. It produces like a fifth of all the manufactured and agricultural goods in the Union. You've got the largest, most diverse workforce, most highly paid workforce, the most colleges and universities. But, you know, California became almost a victim of its own success. You know, in the 40s and 50s, starting in the 70s is when you started to have problems due to excessive growth. And, or, you know, maybe I should say more like unmanaged growth. But, yeah, I don't know. Let's see, the Colorado River, Northern California has water. So if anyone is drying up, it might be Southern California, probably the San Fernando Valley region, and certainly the city of Los Angeles generally. But I think that was more a question of, you know, bad growth management as opposed to anything else. parts of the area grew too quickly, and in some cases without a real plan, is in a sense what happened to California. For a while you had an economic miracle that was like almost too successful, and they're paying for it now.
In the 40s and 50s is that's what started the whole thing. And yeah, they even advertised here in this area. I don't know whether it's Lockheed or who it is. They were advertising back when the war started. They were advertising for people all over the country to come out there and work in aircraft factories out there in parts of California. So a lot of people, I mean, I know people whose families moved out there. They moved back later on, but they moved out there at least during the wartime. Some of them stayed, some of them didn't. But that's just where all that stuff developed. That's where they went. I mean, you can't beat the weather. But the rest of the place, I mean, if you got to drive anywhere, I know if you've lived out there at any point in time, if you got to drive anywhere, it's 3 hours anywhere, and it's just the biggest mess in the world. And it's about like driving in Houston. Houston is not quite as bad, but in Houston, the only place you got to go in is into the ocean, or either circle back around. But, that's some of the things. I know a lot of people made fortunes out there and lost them, too. But there's still some friends of ours that have been out there since the 70s and are not moving back. Some of them are. Some of them have moved back because it got too expensive for them to live. They started out with a small home, and now that home's worth a couple $1 million. And so they'll cash out and move someplace else and buy similar size home and, you know, retire and not have to work another day.
The same thing about, I don't know about upstate New York, but the same thing in the New York City area. You know, the New York City area, believe it or not, 40, 50 years ago, was actually a rather affordable place to live, if you can imagine that now. In a lot of cases, you had rent-controlled housing. I don't know what my parents paid for that apartment in the Bronx in, like, the, let's say, late 60s to 70s. They might not have paid $200 a month, which, you know, even back then wasn't a lot of money. You had a lot of rent-controlled apartments. You have a very good, very, very good transportation system, you know, buses and subways and cabs run everywhere in the city. You don't need to really have a car. We were actually one of the few in that building who actually had a car. My dad's 52 Plymouth, which he kept for about 20 years, and you know, it's a weekend thing. You know, weekend you want to go out to Long Island or go up to whatever. Yeah, that's the only time you ever use a car. But, you know, let's see. On the West Coast, well, the big area, the big wartime employer out there was Kaiser. Because they had to build, you know, the shipping industry took off for obvious reasons. There's a war on. At one time, Kaiser was building those Liberty ships at the rate of presumably one a day. So that was the big draw on the West Coast. Now, you know, you go to Long Island, you had the aviation industry. You had, for example, Grumman. That's where you had a lot of aircraft production, aerospace, aircraft testing. You know, you might not think about it, really, but a lot of military bases, installations in and around the New York City area, they don't have a lot of land that you normally associate with a military base, so they're compact and they're discreet. You don't see them too often. But that was the big employer on the East Coast, was the education industry. You know, Grumman went on to, I had an uncle on my mother's side who I only ever met once or twice. He died at a young age, but he worked for Grumman and Bethpage, and this would have been in the 1960s, mid to late 60s. Now, you know, if you're not aware of what Grumman was building at that location in the 1960s, you know, let's just say there's six of them on the moon. So I like to think that...
Repeater time out, exit. Repeater time out, clear.
About the repeater.
Yep.
During the day, then they leave it off for the net. Is that the way it is? Sorry about that. I don't know how far I got with that. Anyway, I'm at my first stop, so good talking to you.
Yeah, I know all about Grumman. You know, he started in the 30s. Leroy Grumman. I've got read a couple of books about him. Anyway, it's an interesting pathway. They went from that to building Apollo. Talk to you later, M4DJC, clear.
82 BNG. 73s, you have a good one.